Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. Donald Trump is launching a full frontal assault on the freedom of speech. His entire administration is bent on corralling and curtailing and punishing any speech that doesn't toe Trump's party line, that doesn't advance the MAGA or Christian nationalist agenda. And on Monday, September 15th, Donald Trump sued the New York Times for $15 billion. $15 billion with a B. And you all know that now, by now, listening to this podcast, that a lawsuit is launched by filing a complaint in court. That's the first document that you file, the complaint. And it lays out your case, a version of your case. It doesn't have to be complete. It's not supposed to be complete. It's supposed to be short, sweet, to the point. This is what this case is about, so that everybody knows, from the court to the other people involved, etc. And if you remember, I read one of the worst complaints in legal history when Ryan Walters, the state superintendent of Oklahoma, sued the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I walked you all through that complaint part by part to show you how terrible it was. Did not even state a cause of action. In other words, it didn't say this is what law was violated by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Terrible. And Trump's complaint was similarly terrible. Not bad in a different way. Bad in that it was essentially, it looked like it was written for Donald Trump to read and for the people who wrote it to kiss his orange ass. Like, that is what it looked like. It was full of grievance and bombast and adjectives. Or maybe it looked like it was, half of it was dictated by Trump and then put into this complaint. Here are things that I would like to see in the complaint. Oh, wow, I cannot do a Trump voice, y'all. It was terrible. Terrible. And then it was so terrible that something remarkable happened. And I will link to this document in the show notes so that you can see it, but an order came down from the court. So the case was filed on Monday the 15th, and then on September 19th, the judge in the case, who is the district judge, Stephen Merriday, filed an order, and this is on his own, what we would call sua sponte, S-U-A space S-P-O-N-T-E, sua sponte. It means the court's doing it on its own without being asked to do it. The court sua sponte struck the complaint from the record. And what that means, it means as though it did not exist. It's not quite the same as like dismissing the case, but it struck that complaint from the record and said, you can amend it. You've got 28 days to amend. And that's remarkable for a number of reasons. One, because the court just went out of its way and did it on its own. Without even being asked. And I would like to see more of this. And we'll talk about why in just a moment. But also the tone of the order is impressive. And I would like to see more of this. It begins, as every member of the bar of every federal court knows, parentheses, or is presumed to know, Rule 8A, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, requires that a complaint include, quote, a short plain statement of the claim showing that the pleader is entitled to relief. Rule 8E1 helpfully adds, each averment of a pleading shall be simple, concise, and direct. Some pleadings are necessarily longer than others. Shorter complete. And then he goes on to describe Trump's complaint. Even under the most generous and lenient application of Rule 8, the complaint is decidedly improper and impermissible. The pleader initially alleges an electoral victory by President Trump in historic fashion by trouncing the opponent and alludes to the persistent election interference from legacy media led most notoriously by the New York Times. The pleader alludes to the halcyon days of the newspaper but complains that the newspaper has become a full-throated mouthpiece for the Democratic Party, which allegedly resulted in the deranged endorsement of President Trump's principal opponent in the most recent presidential election. The reader of the complaint must labor through allegations such as, quote, a new journalistic low for the hopelessly compromised and tarnished gray lady. The reader must endure an allegation of, quote, the desperate need to defame with partisan spear rather than report with authentic looking glass. And an allegation that, quote, the false narrative about The Apprentice was just the tip of the defendant's melting iceberg of falsehoods. Melting iceberg of falsehoods was something that was and part of this complaint, that bit about The Apprentice, they were essentially, Trump's team was essentially complaining that they said that The Apprentice was what kind of launched Trump, that he wasn't discovered, I believe is the word that he took objection to, until The Apprentice. And then this is my favorite one. The pleader states, quote, The Apprentice represented the cultural magnitude of President Trump's singular brilliance, which captured the zeitgeist of our time. And the judge just kind of dismantles this and then says, you know, assuming that even if we assume that everything in this were true and assuming that you could justify all of these allegations with actual evidence, and even assuming that after finally, quote, melting the defendant's alleged iceberg of falsehoods, the plaintiff prevails for each reason alleged in the complaint, even assuming all of that, a complaint remains an improper and impermissible place for the tedious and burdensome aggregation of prospective evidence, for the rehearsal of tendentious arguments, or for the protracted recitation and explanation of legal authority, putatively supporting the pleader's claim for relief. As every lawyer knows, or is presumed to know, a complaint is not a public forum for vituperation or invective, not a protected platform to rage against an adversary. A complaint is not a megaphone for public relations or a podium for a passionate oration at a political rally or the functional equivalent of the Hyde Park Speaker's Corner. So this is just a really, it's a four-page order. You can go read it. It's well-written. I mean, I've quoted most of it now, but it's important that we see judges start to do this. And the reason is that Donald Trump's legal team vomited 80 pages of this invective and vituperation. 80 pages of this. And then is asking for $15 billion. And they're not doing it because they have a good lawsuit. This is blackmail. I mean, this is mafia stuff by a different name. They are suing the New York Times to bully them into compliance, to force the New York Times to spend a lot of time and money and resources on fighting this lawsuit in court and trying to know which of these claims are actually important, which of these absurd statements they actually have to spend time rebutting or not. And so the judge doing this is preventing the legal system and his court from being complicit in this kind of abuse. This kind of extortion is what it really is. Not blackmail, it's more extortion, Right. And we need to see a lot more of that. We need to see judges and courts standing up and saying, no, 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 look, this is absurd. We are not going to be party to your political extortion of businesses and outlets that are saying things that you do not like, Donald Trump. We are not going to allow you to do that. And I would also like to see, on top of that, I would like to see some, not just criticism, but some consequences for the attorneys that are bringing these kind of cases and complaints on behalf of Donald Trump, and certainly people like Ryan Walters, because some of them are spurious and at least ethically questionable. And if they're not, they should be. And we lawyers ought to be doing more on that regard and working to, you know, get some of these lawyers honestly stripped of their license if they're going to continue to dismantle the rule of law for fascists. But I wanted to start with this one because this is absolutely an attack on free speech, and it is absolutely an attack on the free press, but it's not the kind of attack that we typically envision or that we typically think of, right? When we think about the worst attacks on free speech and fascists and Nazis and authoritarians prohibiting free speech throughout history, through what we know from the books that we've read, history books, be the fiction books, movies, whatever, you typically don't think of these kind of less obvious attacks on free speech, free press, freedom of thought. We think more about prohibiting free speech outright and punishing free speech outright. You said this, so you're going to jail. You said this, so you're getting rounded up. You're not allowed to say that, and you're punished if you do. But that's never how it starts in a free society. It starts like where we're at right now. Actually, it starts like where we were at 7 months ago, before where we are right now. It starts by leaning on businesses and critics and comedians and extorting them and distracting them from what they're trying to do. Garry Kasparov, who knows a thing about this or two, wrote this week on X, I know it's the same playbook, but it's still jarring to hear verbatim lines like, it was a business decision. That's what Putin's spokesmen would say after coercing a company into doing their bidding. Firing a journalist, canceling a show, selling out to a Putin ally, etc. And that, folks, is what we are seeing all over the place. That's what we saw this week, and we're going to get into the Kimmel stuff in just a second, but it's not just the Kimmel stuff. It's some of Trump's closest political financiers taking over TikTok in the United States, which is arguably the most influential algorithm out there. You may not realize it, but I would say it is the most influential algorithm out there right now. And it's going to be in MAGA hands. And if you spent any time on Twitter before it became X, you know what can happen when a political ideologue that is in Trump's camp gets a hold of one of these social media platforms. Really, all of the social media platforms in a couple months are, with the exception of YouTube, are going to be controlled by some close allies to Trump. You know, we heard Trump do this on Air Force One with the media. Let's listen to a quick clip.
Burning Antifa, what you posted. NPR, sir. When...
Are they still here? Oh, good. Congratulations.
Yeah. Regarding designating them a terrorist organization, when they don't have defined leadership or membership, how do you target them?
Who doesn't?
Antifa.
We're going to find out, right? We're going to see. People have been talking about it for a long time. We're going to see. Did they have anything to do with your network?
No.
Okay. But we're going to find out.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Trump asking an NPR reporter who's asking about his executive action declaring Antifa, which is, again, not really a thing other than like Indiana Jones and Captain America, the original anti-fascists. Does Antifa have anything to do with your network? That is a threat. There's a reporter asking him a question about an insane thing he is doing and him turning around and threatening a national public radio reporter and really the entire station. And this is some of the same stuff that we saw with Kimmel, which we're going to get to, but I want to just... There's a lot of discourse right now, and I've been involved a little bit in it online because, you know, First Amendment attorney, that's comes with the territory. And there's a lot of confusion. Everybody in MAGA went to law school at some point last week, like overnight, and they are now experts in constitutional law and administrative law and communications law, and it's just so interesting, and I'm so glad they're there to give their opinions. I am not. They are loathsome. The First Amendment is both a constitutional right and an American value. And this is a thing that is missing in a lot of the discourse and a lot of people's understanding of what is happening and what rights are or not are not being violated. As a constitutional right, free speech means that the government cannot prohibit or burden your speech or expression except in, you know, rare instances such as defamation or death threats, things that don't really have a bearing here, except to say that free speech is not an unlimited right. As an American value, free speech means that we as a society hold this liberty dear, not just in the instance of stopping government censorship, but also in expanding that liberty to other spheres where it may not necessarily be a legal right, but is part of our social agreement, our social compact, a way that we have decided to treat each other, a way that we have decided to value, not just as an American value, but actually put a value on this freedom compared to other freedoms. And we really need to think a little bit more carefully, and when you're, especially if you're having one of these debates online, about the difference between that constitutional right and that American value and what is or is not being trampled. In neither instance, be it the constitutional right or the American value, should we ever treat private for-profit companies as defenders or protectors of free speech. And we talked about this a little bit in episode 25, I think it was, when we were talking about Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, visiting the White House and genuflecting before the golden MAGA idols. Companies exist to make money, not to improve our lives, not to better our world, not to connect you to your world. That is all just marketing to get you to buy products so that they can make money. Companies exist to make money. If they existed to do those other things, they'd be nonprofits doing those other things. Now look, there's nothing wrong with making money, but let's just be clear-eyed about what they are doing. Let's not fool ourselves into thinking they're doing something different. And this is really the issue with the Jimmy Kimmel saga. And I also think this is an interesting overlap of free speech as both a constitutional right and an American value. Because the government, the Trump administration, absolutely played a role in what happened here. First of all, because Donald Trump tweeted out that Jimmy Kimmel was next after Colbert. He tweeted that out this summer, put that out on social media. I mean, and hell, half of Trump's presidential actions and orders come from him posting something on social media. For all we know, that was him firing Jimmy Kimmel, or thinking he was. Who knows what goes on in that addled brain of his. But the Federal Communications Chair, the chair of the Federal Communications Commission, Brendan Carr, absolutely played a role here. Brendan Carr authored the chapter on the FCC in the Project 2025 handbook. And you can go listen to this video. We're not actually going to play the audio, but what Carr told a conservative podcaster, also a guy who apparently, according to some reports, Benny Johnson has taken quite a bit of Russian money. Anyway, Carr is on Johnson's podcast and said that Kimmel, one of the things that Kimmel said was a concerted effort to lie to the American people, and we're going to have remedies that we can look at. Frankly, when you see stuff like this, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. And that line right there goes right back to what we were talking about with this kind of mafioso way of dealing with the opposition. Carr goes on to say, these companies can find ways to change conduct and take action, frankly, on Kimmel, or there's going to be additional work for the FCC ahead. So what he is threatening there is, if you do not act in a way that we like, we are going to come after your business. We are going to make it more expensive for you to do business. And then you get people defending all of this. And we'll actually play the clip here. We'll play the clip of Scott Jennings saying,
you know, Scott Jennings, you were at this table last night and you defended free speech. Mm. Tonight, we are seeing the FCC chairman explicitly threatening a company over speech that they don't like. You're good with it or not?
Well, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel's still free to speak. He just isn't necessarily free to do it on ABC, which obviously made a business decision. I see everybody rushing to blame the administration for the.
So you hear him saying ABC made a business decision. And what he's doing here is he's actually taking advantage of the distinction between the constitutional right and the American value, and doing a little bit of a bait and switch there, because the FCC is a federal government body, and Carr saying we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way, and threatening for the FCC to step in and make business more expensive for ABC, is a government action aimed at suppressing ABC's speech. Their hired spokesperson, Jimmy Kimmel, they wanted to suppress that speech, so they made business more expensive. So is it a business decision? Yes, but is it the government abusing their power to censor the speech of a citizen? It is. So this is both of those things combined. And the fact that it's a business decision, and that they're being, the Trump administration is being, I'm going to say the word smarter here, by leaning on the business side of things, as opposed to leaning directly on Kimmel and threatening him as a person, doesn't make it less of a violation. It makes it more of that entry-level violation, that playbook that Kasparov was talking about. What I was trying to point out to you in the beginning, which is, of course, fascists and authoritarians don't start out with, if you say this, we're going to chuck you in jail. That is a much harder place to start. This is a much easier place to start. And telling everybody and giving their legion of bots and online soldiers this talking point, no, 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 it's just business. It's just business in the sense that Tony Soprano says that. And you can see this too in the crowing that Carr was doing afterwards. He posted on X, Benny Johnson, whose podcast he was on, talks about how Nexstar, which is one of these media groups that owns, you know, X number of stations across 32 countries across the state, or excuse me, 32 ABC stations across the country, removed Kimmel from their broadcast. This is one of the first things that happens. And Carr says on X, I want to thank Nexstar for doing the right thing. Local broadcasters have an obligation to serve the public interest. While this may be an unprecedented decision, it is important for broadcasters to push back on Disney programming that they determine falls short of their community values. I hope that other broadcasters follow Nexstar's lead. This too is it's not a thank you. It's not a hope. This too is a threat. He is the head of an organization, a government body that is dedicated to doing the work of policing our airwaves, and he is policing them like this, and in this abusive manner. And he uses the word unprecedented, which we're definitely going to come back to. But again, folks, Disney cares more. ABC is owned by Walt Disney Company, and Disney cares about making money. Nexstar and the affiliate stations it owns care more about mergers and making money. Look, they may even employ journalists, but they exist to make money. And again, there's nothing wrong with making money. I'm not attacking people that want to make money. I need money to survive too. But let's not fool ourselves, and let's, if we can, let's use it a little bit to our advantage. Push back a little bit. They assume that you don't care. That you're going to keep streaming, and you're going to keep buying, and you're going to keep cruising and keep vacationing. And I think we should show them differently. And I think when you cancel it, you should let them know why. You're going to cancel your Disney Plus, whatever that one's called. Cancel it. But send a letter and say why you're doing it. And again, Carr used the word unprecedented there, and that is the word to describe these times. We've heard it used a lot. That we really are in unprecedented times. I spent the last two weekends at soccer tournaments, cheering on kids from the sidelines. And it's this surreal experience where you're shuffling around town doing the day-to-day of parenting. And trying to teach your growing kids how to be humans in this world as our society seems to be, our government at least, seems to be shredding around us. And as we seem to be making decisions that are going to put all children at risk of terrible pandemics of measles and diphtheria and things that we have eradicated, and they're going to come back and kill not my kids because I'm getting them vaccinated, but you can have breakthrough cases. They're going to kill their classmates. Who knows what kind of country they're going to be living in if we don't fight back now, if we don't take to the streets now. Time, this is unprecedented, and it requires an unprecedented response. I mean, honestly, I think the closest analog we have to what is happening right now, certainly to the attack on free speech, is probably the Alien and Sedition Acts from the very early days of our country. And I just want to point out one other thing about the First Amendment afterwards, since we've talked about it as a constitutional right. We talked about free speech as a constitutional right and as an American value. I want to just spend a little bit of time on the First Amendment itself. It says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and petition their government for a redress of grievances. So that's six rights: secular government, freedom of religion, free exercise of religion, also limited, which you all know, free speech, free press, free assembly, and petition your government for a redress of grievances. Six rights. And all of those are directed at ensuring the freedom of thought, that we can think freely and that we can communicate those ideas freely. And for all of their talk of championing free speech, MAGA is running roughshod over it in a truly unprecedented manner and in ways that we have not seen since some of the darkest times in this country, the Alien and Sedition Acts, what Thomas Jefferson called the Reign of Witches. I was thinking about a Christopher Hitchens quote a lot this week as we saw the MAGA absolutists turn their sights on comedy, on comedians. Because they, of course, can't take a joke. And that's often because they don't understand it. They're not funny. And then Hitchens wrote that the literal mind is baffled by the ironic one. The literal mind is baffled by the ironic one, demanding explanations that only intensify the joke. And this demands that we turn up the heat on Trump, turn up the criticism, turn up the irony. We're going to take a quick break and come back with an absolute banger of a judicial opinion out of Hawaii. So I want to finish with this absolute banger of an opinion by Hawaii Supreme Court Justice Todd Eddins. And the underlying case is about whether a provision in a property deed was valid. The governor sold some land to the Mormon church in 1922. The governor of Hawaii sold 4 acres of land for $20, which, damn, what a steal. And in the deed conveying that property back in 1922, there was a restriction. And that restriction said that the land could be used for, quote, church purposes only. Church purposes only. You can imagine that there's a problem with that. Especially since it said, quote, in the event of its being used for other than church purposes, this grant shall become void, and the land mentioned herein shall immediately revert to and revest to the territory of Hawaii. Okay, so if you stop using this for church purposes, the land goes back to Hawaii. Now, the court was unanimous, and it struck down the provision as a violation of the Establishment Clause. And you can see having that provision in there means that the government of Hawaii is requiring religion to be done on this piece of property, right? That is obviously advancing religion. That is obviously problematic when it comes to the separation of church and state. But that's not what I want to focus on, because this opinion by Hawaii Supreme Court Justice Todd Eddins is absolute fire. It begins, quote, religious liberty, secular government, and social harmony depend on an unbreakable barrier between religion and state, a wall. Foundational to American constitutionalism, the wall that separates church and state stands tall and wide and invincible. Whew. Love that. Tall, wide, and invincible. But I also want to flag, this opinion felt like a distillation of American Crusade into a judicial opinion. I didn't get a cite, and that is more than fine. And in fact, it's better than what I wrote. And about a third of the way in, Supreme Court Justice Eddins says, but there's more to say about how the Supreme Court's recent Religion Clause cases offend both the First Amendment's structure and the Constitution's dual sovereignty structure, and why the state is wrong to rely on current federal law. Basically, hey, Hawaii, we got to stop paying attention to the U.S. Supreme Court because their jurisprudence is so fucked, so far out of whack, that we can't rely on it. Here's some other quotes. And listen, it's taking me a lot not to read you this entire opinion. Quote, if the Supreme Court decides a case based on mission, text, trickery, originalism, or imagination, then that case may have little value to a state that prefers a more principled way or an interpretive approach that does not force, quote, contemporary society to pledge allegiance to the founding era's culture, realities, laws, and understanding of the Constitution. I mean, wow. Mission, text, trickery, originalism, or imagination? Chef's kiss. Then halfway in part four, Eddins really turns his pen on, and it's beautiful. I'm going to read big chunks here, folks. The federal wall cracks. The Supreme Court's recent Religion Clause cases wreck the relationship between free exercise and non-establishment. The court upends an equilibrium designed to protect both religious liberty and a secular government. The impregnable wall prevents government from advancing or inhibiting any faith. That divide preserves our nation's pluralistic complexion. The Roberts Court casually dismisses the lessons of American and world history, the warnings of prominent early Americans, and the judiciary's storied legal minds. Bad things happen unless government and religion are completely separated. The court ditches neutrality and boosts accommodation over the wall. It flirts with the true harms the framers foresaw, coercion, exclusion, and civil strife. It invites state involvement with religion, and it exposes minority faiths and non-believers to majoritarian impulses. A snap of a few fingers and accommodation became a constitutional imperative. Under the court's redesign, the Free Exercise Clause backspaced the Constitution's first words. The court's makeover happened with little mention of the Establishment Clause. Okay, we're going to skip a little bit. As the Roberts Court tears down the wall, it grants new rights and privileges to people who may cause real harm to other people. The court reshaped the First Amendment from no promoting, no sponsoring, and no involvement with religion because of religion's distinctiveness to extending special treatment to religion. Now, some religious people are treated differently than other religious people and non-religious people. Skipping again. Taxpayer funds now flow to religious institutions. So the government collects money from non-believers under threat of jail and uses some of it to support religion. And since not all religions will receive public funds, the government forces minority faiths to support other faiths. Or else. The court twists text, history, purpose, precedent, and public meaning to offend the First Amendment's character of government structure and the Constitution's separate sovereignty structure. As it steamrolls both, the court says nothing about church-state separation and federalism principles. And, all right, last one. The Roberts Court off-the-wall jurisprudence reimagines the First Amendment. The Constitution creates a barrier against state support for religion and state involvement in religion. But the court misshapes the Constitution to require government support of religion. I mean, that is what I am talking about. This is the kind of stuff that we need to be seeing from our state Supreme Court justices slapping down the U.S. Supreme Court that is so absolutely unprincipled. And we need to be seeing the same thing that I talked about at the beginning from our other judges, slapping Trump's absurd mafioso tactics back down too. You can't use our courts of law to extort money out of private companies. Fuck right off. And on that same note of stopping the crusade that these justices are waging to weaponize religious freedom and tear down the wall of separation between church and state, I'm going to ask one favor of all of you today. Rolling Stone published an op-ed about Brett Kavanaugh arguing the case in Santa Fe versus Doe, writing an amicus brief. We talked about this. I wrote an op-ed, and it is published in Rolling Stone. You will find it on all my socials. I would absolutely love for you to go get the link and share it on your own. Please, 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 please go share it. We will try to include it in the show notes too. Please post it. I'm not asking you to retweet or repost me. Go post it on your own. Share it with your friends. If you are so inclined, send it to your elected officials. Send it to your member of Congress and tell them why. Ask them, why isn't Kavanaugh recusing? What we need to try to do is make enough of a stink so that he is forced out of this case. Because without it, he's definitely gonna stay. He is definitely gonna stay on, and he's definitely gonna decide it in favor of imposing prayer on other people's kids at public high school football games.
This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.